Interactive Radio, 1395 Adelaide's 5AA. Email onair at 5AA.com.au. William Goodings.
Right on, 23 minutes to 88223 0000 is the number if you want to get on board and have your say about any and all the topics we've discussed right throughout the morning. Still to come this half hour, well, just before 8 o'clock, we'll speak with Bone Chris McDermott, thanks to the Watermark Hotel, about what has been a busy few days in sport. Plenty of cricket about the place. Of course, the Boxing Day Test, the Adelaide Strikers last night in the 2020. We might ask him, too, about this controversy with the Sydney to Hobart yacht race. If you're just joining us after 7 o'clock, we talked with Senator Corey Bernardi about some multiple voting statistics that became available via the Australian Electoral Commission. He's calling for action, tighter regulations when it comes to ID, potentially the introduction of technology at the voting booth, all potential answers to something he says is a problem with such scope that potentially it could be election swinging, and quoted a number of seats where the differential in the votes at the end of the day was actually fewer than the sort of the numbers of multiple votes we've been seeing. So it's a very interesting issue. A number of calls on that. We're still taking them right throughout the program, right through till 9 o'clock. Right now, though, it's time to talk with IT commentator Still Gerrion about, well, what started at the start of the day as a discussion potentially about the big IT stories of 2011 has turned into a discussion about the big IT stories of right now. Still Gerrion, good morning.
Good morning, Will. Well, you know, how dare you be newsworthy?
Yeah, it's a pain when news gets in the way of a good program.
I know.
Still, Gerrion, well, let's get to the most recent things first. And I guess we chatted with Senator Corey Bernardi right out of 7 o'clock about this multiple voting situation. One of the potential solutions that came up was the use of technology, something I'm well in favour of. You're the expert. What do you have to say about technology or computerisation of the polling booth?
Okay, there's one part of it that I'd very happily support, and the other part I'd like to keep computers well clear of.
Okay.
Having people ticked off on the electoral roll as they place their vote, no problem with that. You know, you come in, I'm Will Goodings, yep. Yes, tick. You know, they press the button, and then if anyone else comes in anywhere and says, I'm Will Goodings, I'd like to vote, they say, hang on, we've already had that person vote.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That would raise that. No problem with that at all. What I don't want to see is computers actually in the polling booth so that you've not got your pencil in your hand, but you're putting something in a computer. There's a lot of danger to that. And it comes from the simple fact that how do you know that what's going on inside the computer is actually correctly recording your vote?
Sure.
And the big advantage of doing it manually is that everyone can sit there, we can watch them counting the paper votes, anyone can understand that process. Mm. If you've got vision that works, you can watch it happening, and anyone can participate and say, hey, look, I don't think that's right. Let's have an argument about that. Once it gets down to it's all happening magically inside a computer, according to computer code that someone audited somewhere, you've suddenly got it done. There's probably only 20 people in Australia who understand it.
No, that's a fair point. Coming from you, I'll take that on board, and we don't want to have a sort of a hanging Chad type scenario either, but we won't get into that. Now, moving on, Malcolm Turnbull and David Smorgon, the subject of the latest hacking scandal.
Yeah, and, well, look, you know, people are pointing at Malcolm Turnbull. He didn't do anything wrong. He just bought something online.
Was that as simple as it was? Break it down for us, because we read about hacking scandals all the time, and frankly, for a lot of people, it's hard to differentiate one from the other. So we hear about these guys like Malcolm Turnbull getting their credit card details posted on the net, and I mean, what makes it different from any other we hear about?
Absolutely nothing. This is an absolute textbook example of the kind of hacking that is going on every day. Well, perhaps not every day, because this is one of the bigger cases, but we're talking, of course, it's the hacking of an organisation called Stratfor, which is a private intelligence company in the United States. What they do is, well, if you're a government, you've got your own national intelligence agencies to tell you what's going on in the world. If you're a private corporation, let's say you're an oil company, you're doing business in Iraq, you want to know, look, what are the risks to your operations?
Sure.
You know, is it safe? So this is a private company that does that work for private clients. But what they also do is that they just have a daily newsletter. I used to get it myself, which is just, hey, what are the kind of security risks in the world today?
Mm.
And anyone can get that kind of stuff by just plonking down a credit card and subscribing.
Oh.
Malcolm Turnbull must have subscribed. I mean, lots of journalists do as well.
So it's as simple as that, a subscription for an online email that
he needed
a credit card to obviously pay for, and that's the information that obviously is stored somewhere at Stratfor, and a hacker has just accessed that. Wow. Yeah.
That's right. Now, Stratfor's made a fundamental mistake here, and it'll be interesting to see what happens to them. Now, they were a target because people in the group Anonymous, or people who just say they're in the group Anonymous, because anyone can just say they're doing it, they targeted Stratfor because, well, they're somehow seen to be, well, they are a secretive organisation, they're connected with, you know, the surveillance state and all of that. So, they're the evil overlords. They just happen to be able to break in. Once they're inside, you are meant, if you're storing credit cards, you are meant to, by the security standards that the credit card industry has in place, you're meant to keep all that in an encrypted form.
Mm.
So it's encoded, and you only decode the credit card numbers to do a transaction, you know, for a few moments. Stratfor's mistake is all of that information was there in a readable form. So, you know, it's like once they're in the computer, it's just open up the database and there it is. Everybody's credit card number, name, address, CCV. And so the hackers have just said, oh, that's not on. We're going to put that online to just punish you.
To expose you. So it's not that they've in fact used this information to go about buying packs of cigarettes or something or other. They've actually done it to say, hang on, here's a company mishandling your details.
That's right. And they see themselves as in a kind of Robin Hood role doing that, exposing bad practices in the security industry.
Wow.
And it's a group of people with Anonymous. They call themselves anti-sec for anti-security. And they're just pointing out bad practices. And in this case, they say, hey, here is a company which is a global consultant about security issues, and they've made a basic security mistake. Now, they have actually charged some of the cards. The other day, they got, I think it was around, I think the number was about 70,000 people's credit card numbers. The other day, they went through a few thousand of them and just started making donations to charities like Save the Children, the Red Cross, and so on.
Oh, wow.
And they estimate that they made donations to charity of about somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million.
Wow.
Using other people's money. Now, it sounds good. They say, hey, it's all going to charity. The problem is, you know, some of these credit card holders are just retired army people who want to stay in touch with what's happening in the world. They don't actually have a lot of credit card stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and they're fraudulent transactions. And one of the recipient charities actually said, hey, don't, because if someone makes a donation to us and then it's found to be a fraudulent transaction, we get charged a $35 reversal fee.
Oh, no. So the charity loses out.
They're actually worse off.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, that's a story we'll continue to monitor throughout the morning.
Mm.
It's that time of year when we sort of start to have a bit of a look back over the year that was. Can you summarise the year of 2011 in technology circles in a matter of words?
Yeah, it was kind of 2010 part two,
right.
the sequel. From my point of view, all of the kind of issues that were around, the big ones were really continuation of the things we'd seen the previous year. And the kinds of things I'm talking about here in Australia, the National Broadband Network.
Sure.
You know, biggest infrastructure project or whatever, that continued. We saw that the political battle was still raging. You know, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? But, well, it started actually happening. We got the first mainland customers connected and signed up, and the first retail prices were announced. It's actually started to get its, you know, first few paying customers. It's a bit behind schedule, about 6 months probably behind, but that's mostly because the agreement between the National Broadband Network Company and Telstra about how they were going to do the changeover, that was 6 months late being signed. So that kind of put a spanner in the works. And the kind of hacking things we're talking about, yep, that's all continued. It's got more media focus and cases like the one we've had today obviously help that. And it just plodded along.
Are we seeing a slowing of the innovation boom then, or is it just a glitch somewhat?
It's a pause. It tends to come in bursts.
Sure.
So what we had, it's 2 years, say, since the iPad was first released. That was something that happened in 2010. And that transformed how people started using tablet computers. I mean, yeah. Tablet computers were kind of only for certain specialists, and now, well, iPads are everywhere, and Apple's selling squillions of them. And what we saw was, all right, and now we see the iPad 2 as just a new version. Same with smartphones, where the iPhone was a groundbreaking one, but we also have many Android phones, which are being made by people like Samsung and HTC and, name every company around. We're just seeing all of that wave of new technology, of mobile technology and tablets spreading out through the community.
Mm.
It's building upon the kind of shifts and changes that were happening. And the way I view it is that go back to when the car or the truck started replacing the horse in cities. I mean, that's something that happened over many years. So from 1 year to the next, you might not notice much. When you're in a small town and the first shopkeeper got a truck to do his deliveries rather than a horse and cart, you think, wow, that's an amazing new thing. But then when it's, oh yeah, we're halfway through the process and we've moved from 20% of the stores to 30% having this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's no longer new. So in a sense, that's the kind of year we saw, I thought.
Well, still, Gary, and it's always fascinating speaking to you. I think we could have continued on for quite some time. I'd have to catch up and do it again at some point. Thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime, Will.
Still Garian, our IT commentator, expert, guru. We've used him a number of times throughout the year on Breakfast, and he's always just fascinating to speak to, an absolute wealth of knowledge. And if you're an IT fan, a tech follower, you make sure you jump on and follow him on Twitter, at Still Garian, and check out his blog because it is, as I say, a wealth of information.